I am Gary Tirola, and this is Optimize Your Life. What's happening, tribe? Welcome back to another episode with yours truly, GTR. And I've got such an exciting guest this week, mainly because I have been working alongside this genius, creative genius, super mission-driven entrepreneur for so many, so many years. It feels like so many years, but so many months. Oliver Wolf, he is the co-founder along with David Parr for a business that is based on conscious sales. And it is called Beyond the Peak Sales, Conscious Sales Agency. It's a mouthful, but conscious sales is a mouthful. And I'm so excited to actually split open this industry and understand the mechanics behind not just an entrepreneur, but a father, a legend of a volleyball player, just really an all-round dude that shows up and honors his word and no matter what is always there and is always optimizing systems. So if you want to think about AI, if there's a human equivalent, it's Oliver Wolf. Welcome, brother.
It's a bold statement, equivalent to AI. Jeez.
And,
but hey, I'll take it.
I'm going to start bold. That's just my experience, you know, my experience of you, you know, like you were optimizing pre-AI before it was cool. So I think.
Yeah, man. Thanks, brother. No, I appreciate the intro.
Yeah, of course. I'm going to jump in straight away. Just with a question of, what was the story behind starting a conscious sales agency in an industry that is predominantly super saturated?
Interesting. Actually, it's funny you say that because as it relates to a sales agency, it's actually not a very saturated space because a lot of people can't actually pull it off. We've been talking about this. Funny enough, I just talked about this with David 2 days ago, and we're talking about how, man, there's so many marketing agencies. Right? Marketing agencies are everywhere, left, right, and center. Sales agencies, you can pretty much name them on one to two hands. And the reason why we found, as it relates to like one of our mentors who's been in a sales agency for about 8-9 years and was one of the only ones at the time that they started, he said it's literally the most difficult thing you can do because you're handling people's sales, which is the lifeblood of their business. Right? If you don't have sales, you don't have nothing. Now, everyone could speak to every department and say, well, if you don't have delivery, you don't have anything. But like really at the end of the day, like if you don't have the money coming in, you can't fuel the business. You can't fuel the delivery. You can't fuel the marketing. You can't fuel anything. So it's actually a very, it's not a very saturated market as it relates to a sales agency specifically. Now, if we're talking about sales, maybe training or coaching or that kind of world, that starts to become saturated. And I imagine that's maybe the direction we want to go.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have to go that direction. I kind of want to give the audience a little bit of perspective on the mission behind you and David starting Beyond the Peak. You know, like I see if you guys are watching this on video, I see a big wolf behind Oliver Wolf. And he really is. He embodies that mentality, right? It's like, let's crack the code on what hasn't been cracked yet. And working really closely with them, a part of the organization for quite a few months as well, I realized something that they taught me a lot about, not sales, actually. I see sales as leadership. Sales is an empowerment attribute to leadership. And the one thing that I learned from both you and David really is that that point, that without sales, a business doesn't run, but sales is just another character attribute to us. So so what pivoted you guys 2 years ago, I believe, in order to start this?
Yeah, I mean, and I think we could even, because I really like your original prompt of like, okay, really like what is conscious sales kind of thing and how did that come to be? And then how does that then come to be Beyond the Peak and the agency and so on? The thing that's really cool about the idea of conscious sales and the word conscious is being thrown around a little bit and it's becoming a bit of a buzzword, but there's still a lot of power to it. It's not been completely wrecked by people using it too much. But the big thing that's interesting is that sales itself has such a bad connotation. And I can remember so many times that I'll have a dialogue with someone and they'll literally say like, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say sales, but like blah, 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 blah. And it's like, you're literally afraid of the word sales. Like there's a problem here.
Yeah.
Right. And so originally even us, we actually fell slightly into, we're now going to call it a trap. We used to think that it was like the conscious way to go was to like avoid the word sales and try to make it more comfortable. And we call it like enrollments. right? And we literally, like, our sales manager role was originally called enrollments manager. And over time, we realized, like, wait a second, right? Every business has an opportunity to choose a world problem to solve, right? Some businesses, very few, might take on more than one. But truly, at the end of the day, an impact-driven business is one that takes, that chooses one problem and says, we're going to solve this, and we're not going to solve this in our lifetime. That's a real world problem worth overcoming. And so one of the world problems we're looking to solve is shadow sales, we could call it, or what is now commonly seen as sales is sort of like crony sales. It's kind of like what conscious capitalism talks about as it relates to capitalism versus crony capitalism, not to go too much down that right now. But there's crony sales, which has become the standard, which is manipulative, scarce-based, fear-based sales tactics to get someone to make a buying decision they typically or can easily forget, and therefore result in refunds and other painful situations. It's not typically based on relationship building. It's not typically based on the individual you're speaking to, but more for your own self-interest. Even though you act as though it's for them, you know there's an agenda within you, and they will sense that, whether they know it consciously or not. That is crony sales. Hmm. Conscious sales is the opposite. It's empowerment. It's finding it's recognizing the fact that the person you're speaking to on the other side is already enough as is, and you get to offer them something to become even more and even better. This doesn't mean that we don't speak to their pain and create a gap, because we need to create awareness around where they are and where they want to be. And we get to be the shepherds to take them to where they want to be as the sales individual. But the idea is to not drill into you're not enough and you need this to be enough. Mm. It's that you are enough, and there's so much more you get to be and become and unfold into. And this is your next step to do that. Right. Mm. Now, what's important, and this is one of my favorite things about conscious sales is about empowering people to make a buying decision, not to make a purchase, a buying decision. A buying decision is a yes or a no. I am just as excited to empower someone to say no to an offer than I am to have them say yes to one. Because what it means is they had enough of a transformation that they recognized what the difference is of what they need to do next. And if what they need to do next is not this, I've done my job as a conscious sales individual. Right. And if it is this, then great. That's awesome as well.
What do you speak into with regards to the philosophy that you embody as an organization and as an entrepreneur with regards to conscious sales, with a person that potentially doesn't understand that you have something that they need? So they don't understand that they have this gap in their life, right? So there is a certain degree of, I would imagine, and you definitely, I'm definitely opening this up to correct me where I'm wrong. There's a degree of conscious manipulation in order to for them to see that they do need something. So essentially it is still sales. So what is the nuanced difference between the sleazy car salesman from the 1970s and the conscious salesperson that's going in there trying to identify the gap, and then as soon as the gap is identified, pouncing on with product, service, etc.?
Yeah. And so if I'm understanding correctly, ultimately what you're asking is, it's like, how do you know if you're almost like a crony salesperson in disguise using conscious like tactics kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because like, I can say I'm a conscious salesperson. I'm going to ask all the same questions. But in the back of my mind, I do understand, I already know that that gap is there. So I'm going to ask questions so you can tell me that gap so that I can just come in and plug and play my product and service.
Yes. So this is very fun. So I love this. And it's funny, this actually goes back like, man, I think 7 or 8 years into my friendship with David, who's, you know, the co-founder of this business we've been working on for 2 years now. Our friendship goes way back, which is also its own fun story. But one of the things I remember where we were more young and immature and such. So part of the reason why we came into conscious sales is we used to use unconscious or more crony, you know, styles, because it's what we were taught. Like, we didn't know any other way. They're just like, hey, you want to make a sale? This is how you do it. You do this thing. And David was really, really, really good at persuading people to do things, even if it wasn't in their best interest. Right. And so it sort of speaks to what you're saying of like using the tactics in a way that's not necessarily in the best interest of the individual you're using it on. So, and then there's a key thing you said, I could use the same words and get them there. ultimately, at the end of the day, the biggest difference between, again, a conscious salesperson and a crony salesperson is your intention and where you're coming from with it, right? Are you coming from a place of, I'm trying to make a sale, or are you coming from a place of, I'm looking to serve, right? To sell consciously is to serve. To sell with cronyism is to be selfish. Right? Trying to make all the S's work right here.
Yeah, I love that.
And so, yeah, I think that wraps up that question a little bit, but I think you had a little bit of a
no, I think it's so important to say, because there's almost three parties to it, right? So the crony, the conscious salesperson, and then there's the consumer, right? Sticking with all the C's here. And the consumer, I think, is unaware, because for so many years, so many decades, they've been cold called by telephone companies or security companies or whatever the case is. So we're really used to the habitual protection of 100%. Protecting ourselves from being forced into a sale. And to be honest, I think it's a bit of a people-pleasing dynamic we can go down the road of being forced into a sale. I don't think we're ever forced into a sale, but I think sometimes we don't know how to say no. And
100%.
How does a conscious salesperson allow room for a consumer to come to a conclusion to themselves and, in other words, say no if they do need to say no?
So that's cool. So it's interesting, because there's actually two angles on that. One, there's the one you said about, like, okay, how do we get them to say no? But there's also the part of your role as a conscious salesperson to become the sage or the advisor and be the one to say no for them. You have that power, right? But again, so many salespeople, and it's not just the salespeople, people's fault, right? It's those people above them that are paying them or that are getting them to do the action. They're prioritizing getting the sale over serving the lead, right? And so when you're being told, bro, get the sale, get the sale, get the sale, you can't help but come in thinking, well, I'm going to get the sale no matter what. I don't care if they say yes or no, I'm going to get them to say yes, right? So, and again, you have to, again, as a very like aware, conscious salesperson, you have to recognize what you just said is the majority of the population, especially in North America, is people pleaser energy. So it's very hard for someone to say no. And we know this. And it's part of a crony salesperson's tools.
Damn.
Fucking bullshit. And so again, a conscious salesperson needs to recognize this, which we do, and be ready to defend them, to protect them by saying no for them if we have to. Right now, of course, if you want to go, and that's our opportunity and such. If you want to go more into the empowerment direction of saying, like, well, I really do want to empower them to say no. Because again, depending on your offer, that might actually make a lot of sense. If you're a coaching business that's looking to empower people to, like, you know, stick up for themselves or create courage and all that, you as a salesperson might want to take this opportunity to, like, create that for them. And then that's where the sales call does start to become. And this is where, again, there's lots of dynamics here, but it can become a slightly bit of a coaching call, being careful that it doesn't become a whole coaching call for over an hour and such, right? Yeah. But that you support them in saying, okay, why are you having so much difficulty with saying no? Is it that there is actually a yes here, you're just not really clear on why it should be? Or is it that you don't know how to say no, and should we explore that a little bit? And here's what's really fun, right? The difference between, again, crony sales, who's looking to get a sale right now and get money in the bank, and a conscious salesperson also recognizes the value of long-term relationships and proper follow-up. If I effectively support someone in getting to their own no, right? Because often no is just not right now, which is okay, right? If I can guide them and support them in getting there, what I've done is created trust and likability, because they trust that I'm willing to support them in saying no. So guess what? And the moment it comes back around, this thing that they might require your service of that they didn't need now, you're the first person they're going to, because they trust you. They trust that if they come back to you, Gary, they know that if it's still not the right time, you're going to tell them again. But that if it is the right time, you'll say it is, and they'll be ready to jump in.
Yeah, I think it's so important to know. A lot of the listeners are entrepreneurs themselves and are either solopreneurs or whatever the term is, but kind of hustling on their own. And I think one of the biggest things that we can take a page, one of the pages, the few pages we can take out of like the big corporate playbook is what is the lifetime value of the customer? And when we can understand that maybe sometimes we have to turn our back on the short-term profits, which sometimes can be tricky when you've got rent or if you've got kids and you want to go on holiday and all of that. But sometimes that move can increase the lifetime value of the customer, i.e. meaning over the long-term earn more money on that customer. But more than that, because that gets a bit boring. Just earning money does get boring. I know it's all what we all want to do, but it's about what is fueling your mission. Is it the transformation of that person? Is it healing that person from a health point of view? Is it helping people optimize their business? Whatever the case is, it has to be a win-win relationship. Now, it's quite clear on how you... I don't want to turn this into like a sales webinar, and I'm very happy to actually go into that as well, but I just don't think we've got enough time to actually go into the whole kind of script of how you manage it.
That'll be more David's side anyway when it comes to that.
yeah 100%. So we'll get David doing a full live actual sales call. Sell me this pen. What I want to know from you is, because what I really admire about you is I'm witnessing you running a business which is focused as a value proposition that it's based in conscious sales, so consciousness, being very aware. And I'm seeing you run that in your life as well, you know, within your family, within your friends. You know, you're really balanced. And that doesn't mean you work less hours. You're not working a 4-hour work week like Tim Ferriss.
Nope.
but you really are balanced and come across as just very peaceful. Even though you've got a really big organization that you're running, how do you juggle this from a personal development point of view, a relationship point of view, a family point of view, and a business point of view?
Yeah, family with twin toddlers. That's quite the adventure.
I mean, that's on another level.
Yeah. So it's a loaded question, obviously. And
super loaded.
I will start with the fact that it's like, so let's see. Something I learned a long time ago, and I actually still apply this. So, okay, no one's got it all together. We know this, right? We know this. We see the Instagram things, and we see it's all the suave and the great life and the luxury and all that. But then we all know that in the back and behind the scenes, there's definitely some things going on, and it's not being shared and all that kind of stuff, right? And there's what sucks about those types of things is that there's a large lack of visibility. You see tiny little snapshots. Whereas when you're in the same business, you actually see a lot, like you see a lot of my interactions day to day, several hours a day, so on and so forth. And so to maintain, quote unquote, or to like show up in what I would consider what you called peaceful, I would call grounded, is knowing one of the many principles, but one of them is vent up, not down. And so what I mean by vent up, not down, is that we humans need to vent, and we need to do it as intentionally as possible, right? Whether that's through martial arts, sports, men's circles, which, you know, I'm in a men's circle that we meet every month for, it's been over 4 years now. You know, so these kinds of ways where men get to express and get out a lot of the things that would actually throw us off kilter and out of groundedness. But you need to be intentional about who those people are that you go to, because if you vent down, which vent down is as it relates to the hierarchy of your business or the hierarchy of the people in your life, right? And so the hierarchy of the business, for example, me as a co-founder, you know, CEO, all the fun things. If I went to like literally the, again, quote unquote, lowest person in the hierarchy, which, you know, we really see everyone as equal and all just coming together under a mission, but having specific roles related to their zones of genius. There's no real hierarchy in the business, but nonetheless, there's still that reporting structure. And if I went to the bottom of my reporting structure and vented about my struggles as a business owner, it would completely throw them off. And it would therefore start to falter our foundation all the way up onto the top, which would then falter our clients. So all to say, that's the venting down that you never want to do. Venting up is to the people that are quote unquote above you, either on the hierarchical structure in the business or in your life. So these are usually people like your spouse, but again, we'll talk a little bit here because there's some nuances there as it relates to feminine and masculine polarity and making sure that you're not just like, you know, that's another thing. But there's then your closest man friends, which as a man is incredibly important, right? There's a lot of men that unfortunately don't have safe spaces with other men to be able to express the things that are happening within them and outside of them. in a way that can be held safely and not judged or criticized on, but only heard, so that this can come out and become a shared energy that we can carry together, versus I keep it all to myself and then would definitely collapse somewhere in the business, somewhere on someone, somehow. Right. And so having that support network of friends, you know, you can trust with your secrets that will not be judged, criticized, or anything of the kind, is incredibly important to building a business, which sounds funny because it's nothing to do with the business.
So interesting thing I'm picking up as well. So your co-founder, I just know because I know the history. I know David is also in the men's group. So what, and so I'm kind of directing this question to your relationship with David and your relationship with your wife, right? So if you go venting sideways, how do you delineate when it is okay to vent sideways to someone that is ultimately a really strong pillar in your life, like David or your wife, like, and when it's relevant to go elsewhere instead of going to these people?
Totally. Yeah. So there's, you could be either highly intentional or just intuitive. So intuitive could be like, as you're doing these vent sideways, you notice what doesn't fucking work. So, and this is especially with like the spouse, if you're like, you're venting about something and every time you vent about that thing, it just turns to shit. Like it turns into an argument. There's an issue. Like it just doesn't work. Or, and what often can happen too, is they take it on themselves. Right. And then it actually affects them and they take it negatively and then they bring it into their world. Those are the things that you start to intuitively recognize and need to stay aware of to not go to them for that. Right. So that's a more intuitive, a more intentional approach. And again, that's like kind of like trial and error style, right? More intentional approach would be to sit down with those individuals and talk about boundaries. Right.
Okay.
So, hey, these are a lot of the things that come up for me that I've noticed within myself. I will often find myself, I don't know, get anxious when XYZ scenario happens, get stressed when XYZ happens, get angry when XYZ happens, I need somewhere to express this, get this out, so on and so forth. Are you a safe space where I can do this, that, this, or that, and or any of those, right? And allow for them to say, you know what, I don't feel like I can hold that space. Again, maybe in the future when I'm more solid in my own world and such, but you know what, for right now, it's not a thing. And so you discuss these boundaries with your with each other, and or once again, on the side of intentionality, create intentional time or scheduled time where you can set the container for that to be held. Right now, if anyone, I don't really know who the audience is. If you don't know what set a container is, it's literally like set the scenario or set a scenario where you're going to have a specific kind of dialogue and it's predetermined what it's going to be about without talking about it yet. So you can agree to what you're going to step into. You're stepping into this container dialogue kind of thing, dialogue container, I guess.
And how do you, I mean, this completely makes sense to me. I practice this. I think maybe a lot of listeners will do something similar, or at least trying to use their intuition of what is going on. I think sometimes intuition.
That's usually more the case.
Yeah. It's like, it's intuition. I always say it's so obvious, but probably the thing that is least actioned on. And I think we need to bring that together. So, but what happens in the scenario now? I love being kind of a devil's advocate.
Yeah.
Say it's your business partner, so it's your co-founder, or it's your wife, your husband, whoever it is in your life, and they're not at that awareness level yet that you're at. So if you ask them, would you intentionally, so in your example of being intentional, would you be comfortable to support me in this area, right? And they believe they are, yet it's very apparent in those situations that maybe they hold on to it, or they don't really have the insights that you need selfishly. So how do you get through that intentionality?
Love that. That's a great question. Yeah. So I think, so that basically speaks to, okay, so the individual on the other side believes they're ready, but ultimately you recognize that they're not through, you know, you've done it a couple of times. You're like, oh wow, this is really not landing. This is actually not sure. It's making things worse for me. Could be like the reality. Right. So, now it depends to what level of, again, like, you know, awareness or consciousness, but let's maybe talk to both. So lowest level of awareness, the truth is you'll probably just have to kind of like create space and do the classic lead by example of what it would take for them to become what they need to be able to hold that space for you. Right? You won't be able to dialogue with them about literally saying like, hey, this is actually what I like. I noticed when I shared what you agreed you could receive, you were not able to receive it. And you're now, you know, like you said, holding it against me. There's resentment. There's something here. Someone who's lower on the awareness level will get triggered by that and just, you know, react and repel and all the negative things, right? And so if you're talking about that level of awareness, then you're probably, again, you're just going to need to like not do it anymore, find it somewhere else, and then just lead by example so that they can kind of like build themselves up, right? When someone's not looking to be saved, or not, it's not the right way to put it. When someone's not looking to be taught or ready to be taught, you can't teach them, right? The only thing you can do is lead by example and spark their curiosity. That's the only thing you can do. Then once you spark curiosity, then you can, you know, facilitate the training needed. Now, if you're speaking to someone who's on the other side of the spectrum, they are more on the awareness side. They actually can, they understand what a trigger is. They understand how to face triggers and all that kind of fun stuff. Then you have the opportunity to, after you have that container, you close it, it fails, but you let it close, you know, whatever. Or again, maybe it's later on, you see the resentment come back up. You set a different container to talk about that. Right. So it's a new container with this individual, and you say, hey, you know, I really appreciate that you were ready, felt ready to speak to me or receive me or whatever it is, set the container where I could vent and so on and so forth. However, what I recognize or what I feel I saw or what, or again, one of the lines I learned a long time ago is I feel therefore it is to me. So it's kind of the sense of like, I'm not saying it's true. I'm saying that to me, this is what I'm feeling. And to me, it's true. I want to hear your side on this, right? So I feel therefore it is to me that after we close that container and I finish my venting, all that kind of stuff, you sort of held it against me. And this is the scenario I saw. What are you seeing? Right? Is this true for you too? And if, again, depending on their awareness level, they'll be able to breathe, check in, be like, hey, you know what? Yeah, I did feel resentful about that. And this is what came up for me. Right? And then you get to speak about each other's, you know, sensations without blame, without accusation, without pointing. It's just, here's what's true to me. Here's what's true to you. Great. What's the middle ground? And so ultimately what you'll close with is either, yeah, you know what? You're right. And I'm conscious of this now. I want to try again. Or yeah, you know what? You're right. And I actually can't hold this space for you. I love you. I'm sorry. You know, all good though. And again, all good, right? That's what we want. We want to get to a decision. And then of course there's the one where it's like, no, you're wrong, which obviously you want to get there in the right way, but that's also good. Like it's, you need to be ready that you are wrong, right? Like that this quote unquote resentment you sense might've been your own story that when you vent to people, they create resentment. Or when you vent to people, da, 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 da. Like you have your own potential stories, which is why, again, it's important to say, I feel therefore it is to me, because it isn't necessarily true. It'd be a story. And then they can reflect back. Actually, no, I felt like I'm checking in with myself and truly I feel no resentment. Actually, I feel very, you know, I feel closer to you because I feel like I got to know you better. That would trigger me back to think, wow, okay, wait a second. This is something for me to check in on. I might have a story around, you know, when I share, I believe people are going to have resentment towards me or something. We're getting a little deep here.
I love that. I love getting super deep. And it's interesting because I'm witnessing your curiosity and your problem solving come out with these explanations, whether it's in your personal life or your business life. And it's the very reason I believe that you're so successful, because you're willing to put, I suppose, the rigidity of ego on the pedestal and be able to witness it. With whether it's building your relationships, whether it's being a father or whether a co-founder or just growing a business. And I've seen this with the people that essentially, I know everyone's equal, but in an organization, of course, there is hierarchy. You can't get away from that. And you're the owner. So everyone else is below you. So with regards to that, I've just seen how you interact with people as well. It comes from an equal point of view and always, which is so interesting to me. It's always, how can we pivot, or how can we create a better solution here, or what can we do here? There's no sense of we're doom and gloom, or it's finite, or it's finite. Which I suppose that's the traits of an entrepreneur, right? It's just cool seeing that come through everything in your life. Like it's, you're very consistent, should I say, with that value, which is interesting. But what I would like to know from you is this: where have you in your life had to zoom out, third person yourself within a relationship, business or personal, and you were wrong? What was that moment where you realized, oh, wait a minute, I am wrong. I've been carrying this belief for so many years. And due to you being aware of that, you were able to pivot and something amazingly grew from that. What was that?
Boy, It's going to be probably a little bit of a cliche answer, but like the truth is like, that's always happening because I'm constantly looking to be wrong. Like even, and you've probably seen these dialogues on our team of me literally being like, hey, like, this is what I think, but I'm happy to be proven wrong. Someone call me out. You know, like I'm literally always looking to be proven wrong because I just know there's an infinite amount of knowledge and we'll never, ever have it all. And I always think to myself, like one of the wisest person in the room is the person who understands that they'll never know everything and there's always more to learn and so on and so forth. Like, but so if I had to try to like point to a specific thing, boy, I think that, well, recently, so we recently joined a program called Simple Operating System. It's run by Alex Sharfin and his team. And he's someone who has coached thousands of businesses from every range of revenue from literally like, you know, 100,000 to 10 billion and everything in between. And so his level of understanding of business is truly unparalleled. And he's been sharing some things about how to operate a business in a way that creates true stability across the organization. And it's interesting how it's like pivoted my thinking a lot when there has been parts of me as I've been building Beyond the Peak where I'm like some parts of me have felt arrived. And I think that once you feel like you arrive, you start to doom yourself because you start to become complacent in that area of where you think you've arrived. Right. The true student is the one who, like, we're all true students and we get to be students of life by continuing to learn and recognizing that we never actually arrive. Right. And so I started to like fall into, let's call it an arrival syndrome for a couple of things. And Alex has come in and like really like scooped some of that up and sort of like flipped it upside down and said, no. And I'm trying to think, I mean, a simple one. It's not a very big one. It's just the first one that comes to mind. One of the things we did is we have our organizational chart. And we flipped it upside down because we liked the idea of it saying, so basically like me and David, instead of being at the top of the org chart, we're at the bottom and everything, you know, trickled upwards from there. And the idea was we were showing, it's like, hey, look, like the leaders serve the team and the team serves a client, like we serve you. And we really are about that. When I shared that with Alex, he's like, that's great and idea, like ideologically, but like practically that's like stupid because it's really hard for people to really understand because they're so used to seeing an org chart going downwards. It just makes sense. And as it relates to like reporting structure and how you run your business and your cadence of meetings of one-on-ones and all these different things, it just doesn't make sense. Right. And so that's just like one thing that's been recent. It's not a really big thing, but there's just a lot of those happening all the time, just constantly like coming in and being like, okay, this is what I believe at the moment is right. But I always throw it out to my leadership team, not even just the leadership team, but like my entire team, always wondering like, okay, what are other people's opinions on this? And where am I likely missing something? I constantly am believing that there's probably a gap in my thinking. And it's not from a place of like lack of confidence, right? Because you could easily, you know, trick this into yourself thinking like, well, is it just that you're not confident in your decisions or confident in your thinking or confident in your stuff? It's like, no, I'm confident in how far I can get it. But I recognize that I get to leverage everyone else around me and their genius to take this to the next level, to take this to the world-class level.
Yeah, it's something I don't even know if it's in books, but it's something that I've always just picked up over the years. And that is a strong leader, a successful entrepreneur, a successful athlete, whoever the case has always got this character attribute. And that is highly, highly opinionated, i.e. back in themselves, yet very, very willing to be wrong and very willing to change based on being wrong.
100%.
And that condenses time. And that's what I've seen so many times. And I think it's difficult because you get to this kind of this point where you're staring your soul in the mirror and it's like, okay, I'm strongly opinionated. I'm backing myself, but now I've created an identity based on that belief. Now, if someone comes in that I don't really know yet and kind of proves that I may be wrong, it opposes it. Yeah, you face your ego. And I suppose that's the beautiful edge of growth that we get to face. And like you said, I've witnessed that with you over and over, and it's beautiful. And I think this is exactly why you are where you're at, you know? I want to leave in the last couple minutes, I want to leave the listeners, and you can take this in any direction you want, but I want to give them something actionable that you personally personally do as an entrepreneur or a dad or a spouse that is something that it may be obvious, may not be obvious, but it's something that you can't skip out. I'm not going to say daily, but at least like 4 to 5 times a week, like, you know, or even like the once a month, but like it's something that is such a strong pillar in your life that you have to do it. And maybe super unique for some other people to try.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm going to check in with you for a second. Probably should ask you before the podcast. Your listeners are entrepreneurs. Like, that's like the gist of it. Like, that's the general idea, at least.
Mission-driven entrepreneurs that essentially are looking for new edges in order to grow themselves personally from a business point of view too.
I love this is one that I've been preaching now for three years now, and it's I love how it's not something that people really recognize the importance of. Which is so for, and I'll share what mine is, and then I'll share like what the higher level of it is as it attributes to individuals. And it's funny because you mentioned in the intro volleyball. And so I play volleyball about twice a week at least. And the reason why I'm sharing this as the thing that needs to be done consistently for an individual is I'm not telling you to go play volleyball. I'm telling you to have, especially again, there's two different ways, and I'm going to speak just to one for now, because the one I can really connect with, which is if you're an athlete or a competitive individual, you need to play a sport and you need to play a competitive sport, right? Not just pick up, like, yes, you can play pickup, sure. But like, get yourself into a competitive sport. I promise you the energy that comes from being in a competitive environment, that's not the business, but that's athletic and purely yourself, whether team or one-on-one sport or something of the kind, right? So you can play like a, I don't know, badminton or tennis, that's like less people or a single individual, but like going up against someone else on an athletic level is so healthy for you as someone who, again, in the business world, you're constantly competing every day. Now, typically in the business world, you're competing with yourself and so on and so forth, but man, playing a sport athletically, I stopped at the beginning, around the beginning of my entrepreneurial career. I used to play soccer till I was like 20, you know, I played intercity level, like, you know, pretty good level, and played a bunch of other sports. And then I went to university, studied business, stopped playing any competitive sport, some pickup here and there, like every year I would, but stopped for, I think literally like a fucking decade, man.
Yeah.
And then finally I was like, you know what? I'm going back into soccer. And I joined a league, actually joined kind of league and a half. And I was just blown away by the amount of like dopamine, serotonin, purpose, fulfillment. Like I got my energy, like so much came from it that I was like, wow, this is literally therapy for me. This has now become therapy to the level where my wife recognizes the importance of it and makes sure that I can go out and play volleyball, even though I've got a startup business and twin toddlers and a community that I put intentional energy towards, all these things. She is also recognizing the importance of me playing volleyball. And so I get to go into this. So first it was soccer. Then I wasn't liking the vibe of the people I was playing against. So I went into volleyball with my friends and been like crazy competitive since. Like you saw, you know, we just came back from
you guys won biggest tournament.
The other one, yeah, we won one of our tournaments. Yeah, a couple of weeks ago. The one this weekend we didn't. It was the largest single day volleyball tournament in the world. 630 teams in one day.
Oh wow!
52 courts. Yeah, it's pretty nuts.
It's amazing. It's it's so funny because out of your team of four, I know and I've worked with three of the team of four. So it's been such a spectacle watching you guys. And I just remember the last one. I don't know who was, were you holding the trophy or was it Toma? I was like,
we're all holding it. You know, it's a classic shot.
It was like just such a beautiful experience. And was like in that moment, actually yesterday I made the, I've also competed in sports my whole life, and I was saying the last 2 years because of injury I haven't. I was like yesterday for the first time, I'm like, I I need to get back into it. And I was like,
yeah,
but
I'm telling you,
I'm all about curious sports. So I've decided I want to jump into a swim run event. I don't know if you've seen swim run. I want to get to the ultra distance one, which is Otello, which is essentially you swim and run, right? But you transition in Nordic waters, and you transition like 15 times, like in and out of the water. So you have to run with the water shoes on and all that. Anyway, it's something that I've just been wanting to try. And it's funny it comes up because I was like, I know I need that. I didn't know why I needed that. And now you've given it clarity.
So many entrepreneurs have that exact thought. You said that it was like, I'm feeling called to it. Or I'm feeling pulled, or like something about like, just like, I'm like, yo, feed that. You like, do it. Like the moment you're starting to get this sense that like, I need to do this sport. I feel like I got to do this sport. Because again, the entrepreneur side of you is like, no, you ain't got time for that. I got to go do the business.
Yeah,
you
know?
Like you're just like, it's like, it feels like a battle. But as soon as you do it, I'm telling you, it's like, oh, wait, this is part of running my business.
Yeah. Ah, that's so beautiful. There's so much about running a business I found that is, and such a beautiful note to end on, is that there's so much outside the stereotypical 9-to-5 that actually feeds the business way more than the 9-to-5. I almost feel like 9-to-5 is managing the administration of what's happening, putting out fires and all that as an entrepreneur. And then what surrounds it, whether it's family, friends, sports, and all that, is what's like stoking that fire.
Yeah, amplifying it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, I'm so grateful to be doing life with you in many different shapes and forms, and I'm super excited just to watch you take not just yourself, but like your family and your volleyball, and of course Beyond the Peak Conscious Sales Agency to another level. Where can people find the sales agency in case they're in the space of looking to outsource sales? How did they find
it? Yeah. And to be clear about that, because we don't want to just like talk to anyone kind of thing. We're very niched to the fact that we work with 7-figure coaches looking to go beyond 7 figures sort of thing. And so it's coaching businesses that actually have some kind of a transformational product that's been proven. Hence 7-figure is more about having a proven product and a system to generate qualified booked appointments.
Yeah.
So if that's specifically you, then we definitely want to have a conversation. And the easiest place to go would be beyondthepeak.co. That's CO. So beyondthepeak.co. And if you really want to see more about it, you do beyondthepeak.co/offerdeck. And that'll give you like a really good run about what we're about. Otherwise, you know, we're starting to actually build out a conscious sales certification in development, not out yet. But once that's up, that'll be consciousales.com. The website's actually up. You just can't buy anything yet. So if you want to learn a little bit more about conscious sales and our story and all that, you can go to consciousales.com. That's 2 S's between conscious and sales. That's about it. That's the gist.
That's amazing. And for anyone that is tempted, trust me, go into it. These guys running Beyond the Peak, Oliver, David, and the whole team, actually, and not just the two co-founders, are epic in every way. Trust me, they put values and morals way up front. It is like the pillar that leads everything. And they've taught me how to be a more conscious leader myself, not just in business, in my relationship with Claire, in life, and really just the confidence that I've been able to learn. Or I think it was through osmosis, through like being around them, you know, has been fundamental to my growth. So thanks, brother. I appreciate you coming on, and I look forward to
it. You, brother.